Hello and welcome to the Red Rock Fantasy Basketball Podcast. My name is Josh Lloyd and you can find me on Twitter and on Instagram at redrock_bball, facebook.com/redrockbasketball. Email address is redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com and also the YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/redrockfantasybasketballpodcast, or you can always find the link to that on the website. Back today with another podcast, a draft review, a free agency discussion. I'm not doing this one solo though. I am joined by Chris Towers of CBS Sports. Chris, how are you going?
I'm good. Just finishing up the work day. I know you're just starting your day, so we're on opposite sides here, but I'm doing great. We've got a lot to talk to about today.
We do. Now, I'm glad you mentioned that we are on opposite sides of the world, because I did mention it the other day on my Twitter account, but not everyone would have heard that, but I am heading across to your side of the world, Chris, next week, and I will be in Vegas for Las Vegas Summer League next week. So anybody who listens to the podcast who is in or around Las Vegas, please let me know and we'll try and catch up.
Now, yeah,
should be a good time over in Vegas. I'm looking forward to it immensely, especially considering the weather over here. Now I'm going to talk in Celsius here, Chris, which might confuse you. It's about
I can pull up the Google thing to change it, so I know what you're talking about.
So it's about, let's get the exact temperature of what it is here at the moment. It's brilliant. Yeah, it's currently 9 degrees Celsius here at the moment, which I reckon is probably about, I'm going to guess 40-ish.
48.
Okay. Yeah, so that's the current temperature here. When I head over to Vegas, we're looking at about 42 degrees Celsius, which is what, 110?
It's a pretty, yeah, 107, a lot.
It's a pretty big difference, and I'm just looking at all my clothes from summer and going, yeah, I think I may have gotten a little bit fat over the winter, so I might need to buy some bigger clothes because I'm going to need them. But it's going to be good anyway.
We don't get winter, so I don't have that much to concern myself with there. I wear the same clothes all year round.
Look, so do I in general, because I always hear it from everybody. You never wear any tops. All you're wearing is t-shirts and, you know, I'll say flip-flops, but we call them thongs over here. That's all I wear all throughout winter, and I just hear it from everybody. But now, I'm going to actually have to put shorts on and make sure that everything is fitting correctly, because I don't own any sort of long sleeve tops or anything like that, because yeah, it just makes me uncomfortable. But enough of weather and fashion, I think. Well, go ahead.
I think the good thing about Vegas is you're never going to look out of place no matter what you're wearing.
Yeah,
there's going to be some form of version. Yeah, there's going to be some form of every person there.
Exactly.
So
I was last there 4 years ago, I think, and yeah, it's pretty much anything goes to a degree. And I'm pretty happy with that. All right. Now, Chris, before we get into all this talk, you are on Twitter at CTowersCBS. So if anyone doesn't follow you already, they can head across there. Now, what's your role at CBS? I know you host the CBS Fantasy Basketball Podcast. What other stuff do you do over there?
CBS Fantasy Basketball Podcast on iTunes and all places the fine podcasts are sold.
Of course.
I'm a fantasy writer. In general, I focus on fantasy basketball. That's my main thing. That's where I get my face time. But I also do fantasy baseball, fantasy football. So it's I'm kind of a jack of all trades over here.
Living the dream, just writing fantasy stuff all year round.
Yep, pretty much. Right now, it's been a lot of trying to juggle. Still, we're in the middle of the baseball season and trying to keep. If you follow me on Twitter, you'll know more than one eye and all 10 fingers on Twitter following all the news.
Yeah, well, that's when I talk to people about what I'm doing, because I'm obviously just covering basketball stuff, and people will see the playoffs are on and they go, oh, you're going to have a break when the playoffs are over. That's good. You can have a break. I'm not having a break. I have a break from doing stuff during the finals, because once the finals stop, like, that's when it gets busy. And then maybe when we head to the end of August, it gets quiet, but then middle of September, end of September, the fantasy drafts start back up anyway. This is the craziest time of the year, pretty much, maybe not for fantasy, because heading into October is probably the busiest time for us in terms of fantasy, but NBA time, this is just a crazy time of year.
Yeah, I mean, no, it's absolutely from a work perspective, I do way less basketball from mid-April to mid-June.
Oh, absolutely.
That's when I'm researching for the draft or, looking at free agency stuff. But once the finals are over, it's 6 days until the draft or 8 days until the draft this year. And then after the draft, it was 6 days and then free agency started.
Yep. And you know, it started off, we had less than 24 hours of free, because not if anyone knows when we were recording this, but it's currently 6 p.m. Eastern time Wednesday.
Yeah.
So we're less than 24 hours into free agency, and there's already been probably 24 guys that have signed, a rough estimate.
Yeah, and some pretty big names. And you know, I fell asleep last night. I have all my Twitter notifications set, but I put my phone on Do Not Disturb at midnight so I don't get woken up. My cat woke me up at 3:30 in the morning. I think she bit me. So I took that opportunity to look at my phone, and I'm just like, am I still dreaming? Al-Farouq Aminu got $30 million? There's just no, you can't react to a free agency signing this summer.
No.
Because they're all crazy.
Yeah, I saw that Aminu one, because that was obviously the first one that came through and went, okay. But then you think, okay, Portland needs somebody. Everybody is going, it appears. No Wes Matthews, no Aldridge. Robin Lopez is gone. Batum's gone. Like, they need someone. And I was talking last week when I did my draft recap, who the hell is going to start as the small forward in Portland? And we're going, is it going to be Alan Crabb? Is it Pat Connaughton going to start there? But I think that this signing, I really like Aminu. He's offering no offense, but I think he's got to be surrounded by the right players, but I think he can be a real interesting signing for them. And I reckon he's going to be a really sneaky fantasy guy. What are your takes on him as a fantasy player heading into next season, assuming he is going to be the starting small forward?
Well, I think, you know, last year, I don't know how much daily you played last year, but he was one of my favorite daily plays because he was always super cheap. And anytime he got, you know, 25 plus minutes, he put up huge numbers just because he's someone who, I think last year he averaged nearly 2 blocks and 2 steals per 36, but he only played 18 and a half minutes per game. He's a really good rebounder for a small forward. Yeah, I think if he can get 25 minutes per game, I think you're looking at a solid, especially in a categories league, a pretty solid pickup.
I think that I reckon he'll probably get more than 25 minutes a game, because I just don't know. Obviously, there's a lot to play out, but I'm not sure who's going to get the minutes there. He could, like, the last couple of weeks in Dallas, he ended up playing 28 minutes a game, and you're right, he's going to get at least a steal, at least a block. He can hit threes, not necessarily all that efficiently in general. He only hit 27% of them last year, but he can grab big rebounds. I think when he was the season before, when he was with the Pelicans, he had like a 20 rebound game, if my memory serves me correctly.
Yeah, that sounds right.
And he can do that, and especially from a small forward. Like, you might get 5 or 6 rebounds from a small forward, but he could go out and average 8 rebounds and then average a steal, average a block, get 0.7 threes. He'll probably only get you 8 points, but everything else makes it, like, you know, last round of a draft, the opportunity is going to be there, which we always know is key. And I think it's good for him, and it's good for fantasy owners, I think.
Yeah. He averaged 6.6 rebounds and 2.8 combined blocks and steals when he got 20 plus minutes last season.
Yeah. That's fantastic numbers. And I always go on about it, Chris, about these, you know, the steals and blocks. Is it, people underrate the impact they can have in a fantasy league because the numbers are low. Like, you say 2.8, you know, that's fine. The number is small. Where if you say someone averages 15 points, it's a bigger number. But 2.8 steals and blocks is probably 3 times more valuable than someone averaging 15 points because of scarcity and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, and especially every added block gets you closer to winning a category.
Exactly. And when, you know, the block category for a week, you might only have 25 or 30 in total. Every one of those is just such a bigger percentage, as opposed to points where you might have 870 versus 830 during the week, where an extra 2 buckets means nothing. So that's something that he's one of those guys who goes under the radar because he only scores, he only averaged 5.5 points a game last year, but those other categories are really important. Now, the other guys who changed teams, we've only got 3 other guys that have changed teams so far. Amir Johnson, 2 years to the Boston Celtics, $24 million. What did you think of that?
There are real questions about whether he can stay healthy. I think he's had ankle issues in each of the last 2 seasons. I think 2 years ago it wasn't that big of a deal. I don't think he missed that much time. But last year, I remember it costing him a handful of games. If he can stay healthy, I love the fit, though, especially with him adding a 3-point shot over the last couple of years. I think it could be a really good fit in Boston.
I was unreasonably high on Amir Johnson last year. I think because he had that such a good 2013-14 season, he's another guy who hits a 3, big rebound numbers, good blocks, a really good field goal percentage as well. But the ankles were a real bother. And I'd heard, I remember reading it somewhere throughout the season, that the ankles were a real problem for his career, not for the season, in terms of he is never going to get over these consistent ankle injuries. And that was why that the Raptors weren't playing him and had no real interest, so to speak, in re-signing him. So that worries me. I don't think he's going to be a reliable guy. It also worries me that there's just now an extra body in the front court in Boston. Solinger, Olynyk, Zeller, and now Amir Johnson. Go back to that stage where everyone's going to play 24 minutes again, pretty much like they did last year, which really hampers them for fantasy value. And until we see how the situation plays itself out, it doesn't feel like that any of them are going to be able to grab a real stranglehold, because they're all good enough to demand a starter's role on a team like Boston, but you can't have four starters for two spots.
It's kind of indicative of everything about Boston over the last couple of years. They just have a bunch of C-plus guys.
Yep.
You know, they're fine, they're pretty good, but they don't have... There's nobody that stands out, like you said.
It's even like the way that they attack the draft as well. Like, okay, so we've got Marcus Smart, we've got Isaiah Thomas, we've got Avery Bradley. Let's draft another guard like RJ Hunter and Rozier, and just have all these guys who you could see getting... You know, Thomas is obviously the best of them, but everyone else, I could make a case for Smart getting 30 minutes. I could make a case for Bradley getting 30 minutes. I could give Rozier 22 minutes. I could give RJ Hunter 24 minutes.
Out of minutes.
And then who plays where? And then you've got Evan Turner there. And then there's Jay Crowder to come back. There's just, they're going to have 15 guys who are all going to be demanding over 20 minutes. And it's not going to work out in our favor from a fantasy point of view, unless there's some clear delineation and Brad Stevens goes, right, this is who it is, but... From Brad Stevens' history, it feels unlikely that it'll be the case.
There were, I think there were three or four teams like that specifically last season. Minnesota was a lot like that, and Milwaukee especially, where it was just like, it changed later on in the season for both of those teams, but it was for a long stretch of the season, it was just like, they have guys that I like, but none of them are in a situation that I like.
Oh, exactly. Milwaukee was horrible like that, but they did... Yeah. They did even it out at the end of the season when it became clear, like, these are the best players, these are not so good, and it seemed like Jason Kidd was just giving them all, like, a two-month trial period.
Yeah.
And it was frustrating, but in the end, that all worked out. All right, Tyson Chandler.
Yeah.
I'm surprised. I know that the Suns are going hard after big-name guys. They've just, about half an hour before we started recording this, they're having LaMarcus Aldridge in for his meeting, and Tyson Chandler is sitting in that meeting. So that's obviously a big part of, like, this is what we're trying to build. I really like Alex Len, so it disappoints me a little bit that Chandler's going to be there. What do you think about this Tyson Chandler situation? He's obviously a better player than Len, but it does hamper Len's ability to develop, and I don't really think that's going to push Phoenix to become a title contender or anything like that. It's an odd move at 4 years as well when he's 32 years old.
Yeah, I think it's 2 years too long. When I first heard that it was a multi-year deal, I was like, 2 years, $14 million per, that would make sense. And then 4 years is crazy. But, you know, I think what we'll see is him get, you know, Chandler's going to get 28 to 30 minutes per game, because there are real concerns about Alex Len's feet and ankles. Yep. You know, this is a guy who had... I want to say he had, was it microfracture surgery in both feet? Or
he had some sort of surgery in both feet. I don't remember what it was particular, but there was definitely surgery in both.
Before he even got to the draft, and this is a 260, he was 260 when he was drafted. He's probably closer to 270 now. I really do like him. I just, the concerns about him staying healthy are big enough where I like the idea of him being used as a caddy for Chandler in a basketball sense. For fantasy, obviously one of the more promising young centers probably just got buried.
Oh, yeah. And Chandler's going to be what he is, a guy that gets big rebound numbers, like double-digit rebounds, blocks. He's going to score maybe 10 points, maybe 11 points. He's going to shoot about 60% from the field, basically what Brandon Wright was doing, but a better version of Brandon Wright.
Yeah.
He's a better player, and he's gonna fit well with Brandon Knight, who was re-signed today with Bledsoe. I think that he'll fit well because he'll be someone that they can kick in, drive, pick and roll, all that sort of stuff. We know how well he rolls to the rim. It makes sense there. Just the 4 years just feels so long. He's going to be 36 when the contract finishes, and we don't know how guys are going to age, but it feels too long.
It's definitely kind of a Suns heat check. Like, our training staff's so good, we're gonna see how far we can push it and see if we can keep Tyson Chandler healthy until 36.
It also feels like it came out of nowhere to me. I don't think the Suns, I don't think I'd heard them mentioned at all in terms of looking at Chandler. And so when I wake up, you know, one day into free agency and I see that he's gone to Phoenix, it was a bit like, oh, okay, well, that's something that I didn't expect at all.
Yeah.
The last guy who's changed teams, Damari Carroll, has gone from Atlanta. He was always going to get a big pay increase, but he's gone to Toronto. I love it. I love the fit in Toronto. What are your thoughts on it?
From a need perspective, it's a huge win. Like, they needed a small forward. Terrence Ross. Every time I think Terrence Ross, part of me wants to say Terrence Jones. Terrence Ross, just I was never a Terrence Ross fan. I didn't see it. He has, especially for fantasy, he's been so, like, what a waste of 30 minutes for fantasy.
He was horrible.
Just a guy who gets 11 points and nothing else.
Yeah.
Whereas Damari Carroll, you know, last season, the assist numbers weren't great, but 5 rebounds, 1.3 steals, 1.7 three-pointers, really efficient. I think he fits a big need, and I think he could play 30, 35 minutes for them. This is the one signing so far that I think has the most bust potential.
Yeah.
Like, I think Damari Carroll's really good, but I think Atlanta was an especially good fit for him, you know?
That's the key. Like, does he, now that he's now the highest paid player for Toronto, does that bring extra pressure to him? I think it obviously does. And does he not fit now outside of Atlanta? But in terms of the fit, I think he fits exactly what they wanted. They wanted someone who could score at the three, and that was Terrence Ross's, you know, alleged role. He'd go out there and hit threes. But they also wanted someone who could provide defense, and Ross couldn't do that, so they put James Johnson out there to do that. But you get it all in one package here. Okay, Carroll, you go out there, you hit threes, you defend. And I don't know if many people remember, but in the playoffs, he was just scoring at a ridiculous rate. I think he had 6 games in a row where he scored 20-plus points. He was Atlanta's leading scorer for much of the playoffs, and I don't expect that to continue in Toronto, but he showed a completely different side of his game to me in the playoffs when we expect him to be a 12-point guy, hit the threes, get the steals, grab some rebounds, but he turned into a real focal scorer throughout the playoffs, and that was something that I think that's probably added an extra couple of million onto his contract. The fact that he was able to go, look, I'm in the playoffs, first time really in a big role, and I'm going to be at big stretches, I'm going to be the best player on this team, and that surprised me a lot.
A little poor man's Kawhi in the playoffs.
Yep, exactly.
And I think the opportunity for another step forward, maybe not a huge one, but another step forward is there. He's someone who's so, I think one of the guys from the starters tweet, I think Trey Kirby tweeted out that he was assisted on 83% of his baskets last season, and the Raptors had the third fewest assists per field goal attempt last season. So I have some concerns about him maybe being asked to do a little more, create a little more for himself, and just the efficiency taking a hit. That's my only concern.
Yeah, because you go in Toronto, Lowry can pass, but he's not a pass-first guy. DeRozan's probably an underrated source of assists, but Valanciunas can't pass. Whoever they play at the four, we don't even know who's going to be at the four there. Terrence Ross can't pass. There's not, like, in Atlanta, Millsap can distribute the ball. Horford can distribute the ball. Korver, maybe not so much, but Teague can as well. There's just more options for him to get the ball. So it is going to be an extra step up in terms of, right, you're getting paid now, you do more of this on your own rather than be a fifth option, so to speak.
Worth mentioning, if they do ask him to create a little more, there has been talk of him playing four at times. They're supposed to be going after Wes Matthews with the idea of Wes Matthews, DeRozan, Damari Carroll being their 2 through 4.
Yep.
I think as a four, he can start taking guys off the dribble a little more. Like I said, the poor man's Kawhi Leonard. That's where I think Kawhi's best suited offensively too. So I like that idea. And if that's what it ends up being, that they add another two instead of a four, I think I like him even more.
Yeah, that would be very, very interesting, because you're right. He is that guy who can, we know how good of a rebounder he is as a three, and that would hold up against the fours. And the fours are, they're all shrinking in size in the NBA anyway. Yeah. We don't see guys at the four, many guys at 6'11 or 6'10 or anything like that. You see a lot of guys playing that small. Yeah, this talk of Paul George going to play the four now. I know he's 6'10, but he's not hulking. He's not huge. He's not like impossible to move off the block or anything like that. And that's the sort of situation where, you know, Carroll and Paul George matched up at the four fits perfectly. And that's the way the league's headed, definitely. All right, they're the four guys that have signed so far, Chris. LaMarcus Aldridge, all we know that so far is that he has ruled out the Lakers. Apparently did not gel with Kobe Bryant. I know that's probably hard for a lot of people to believe, but their personalities didn't quite mesh.
Somehow the idea of playing a Pau Gasol to a 37-year-old Kobe Bryant coming off three straight season-ending injuries didn't appeal to a 29-year-old who's never won a title.
And playing alongside Robert Sacre in the front court maybe didn't go down so well either.
Yeah, I can't imagine.
So we don't know about LaMarcus Aldridge at this point. No matter where he goes, pretty much his value will stay relatively similar. Maybe in San Antonio it dips a little bit because of the presence of Duncan and Leonard, but even so, he's going to do what he does. I don't think there's much need to be any concerned about Aldridge. He's not going to, unless something odd happens, he's not going to go to a situation, a Kevin Love type situation, where his numbers drop by 10 points a game and he loses four rebounds or anything like that. I don't think anyway. Do you see any situation like that?
I think you probably drop him out of the first round if he goes to San Antonio. That's the only thing. You're probably not getting 20 field goal attempts per game from him. He's not playing 36 minutes a game. That's my only thing, but it's not like he's falling that far. I'd still take him probably in the second half of the second round at worst.
There's no doubt he's still in the top 25. And you know, once you get past that first seven or eight guys, the next probably 12 to 14 guys are relatively interchangeable to a degree, depending on what you're trying to do with your team, and he'll fit into that position pretty comfortably. All right, so a ton of other guys, Chris, have re-signed. We don't really need to talk about it too much. Kawhi Leonard, that was an obvious one. Well, they haven't all re-signed, but it's looking like they're all re-signing, 99% done. Jimmy Butler, yep. Damian Lillard and Anthony Davis got their big extensions. Kevin Love has re-signed with a 5-year deal for Cleveland. Were you surprised?
I'm not surprised. He's 26. He's never been healthy for more than one season at a time. He's never played in more than, four playoff games, I think, is all he made it to this year. I'm not surprised that he took the guaranteed money. I'm disappointed. From a fantasy perspective, this is a guy who was, his last season in Minnesota, he was arguably the second or third best fantasy option on the board. He was in that discussion after Kevin Durant. And now he's, I don't even know how high you can take him.
Where do you take him? Is it inside the top 30?
16-8 and two assists and some three and good 3-point shooting still.
Yep.
I think we'll see him play better than he did this season. You know, Chris Bosh only got worse after his first season playing with LeBron. And it was actually, I wrote a blog post yesterday that comparing that and like the drop in their production from their first year, their last year without LeBron to their first year with as that third option was really strikingly similar. But Kevin Love had that back injury all season. I think they'll use him differently. I think there will be a big, motivation organizationally to get him more involved in the offense and keep him happy.
It would be surprising for him to get back to a 20-10 guy.
Yeah. Shooting was really bad.
Not 26-14, but 20-10.
Sure. 20-10, three assists. You're looking at, I think you're probably still taking him in the second round just because the upside's so high and the floor is still relatively high.
I don't reckon I'd take him that high, to be honest. I reckon I would leave him till, I reckon, after pick 30, but that would mean that someone would most likely grab him. So I just put myself out of the Kevin Love sweepstakes for my fantasy leagues, and that's fine. But I reckon there's other guys, and the way that I generally build my team, I reckon there's other guys that I would grab around that time who feel a little bit more stable, perhaps.
Yeah, and the one thing he'll give you at a really elite rate now is 3-point shooting, and that's a lot easier to find. So that makes sense.
That's true. All right, some other guys who have re-signed. Alexei Ajinsa, I really love that. I think Ajinsa can be a really good player. I hope that that spells the end of Omer Asik in New Orleans from a fantasy point of view, because I like what Ajinsa can do. If not, he becomes the number one backup there to Davis and to Asik as well. So he can get 24 minutes. He becomes a deeper league guy. But if Asik is gone and he's a starter, I like Ajinsa a lot. I'm probably a little bit overexcited about him, but I do like the signing.
From an aesthetic perspective, I can't watch him and Anthony Davis play together because they wear all the same accessories, and I can't tell them apart on the floor. Like, Ajinsa just kind of looks like a stretched out version of Anthony Davis, and I don't like when players, like, there was a point where Jody Meeks was with the Lakers wearing the exact same things that Kobe does, and it's too hard. Oh. Yeah, it's too hard. They have the shaved head. It's too hard for me to tell them apart. So keep them off the floor together. I'm sorry to ruin your dreams.
No, well, we just need Ajinsa to go with the Kirk Heinrich accessories pack, and that'll separate them beautifully. And just as we're recording here, Chris, I've just seen Brandon Wright has agreed to a 3-year, $18 million deal with the Grizzlies.
It stinks for fantasy because he's never going to play, but that's a great contract.
It means that Kufos is gone almost definitely from Memphis. But yeah, that's pretty fantastic. What a backup to have behind Randolph and Gasol. It doesn't mean anything in terms of Gasol not signing, but it's pretty great. All right, let's go through the rest of these guys who have re-signed. Goran Dragic, Mike Dunleavy, Danny Green. Anything to say on any of those guys?
Dragic. Potential's a little lower in Miami than it would have been if he had gone somewhere else, but I'm not sure he was ever going anywhere else. He's still, you know, more of a probably a third guard now.
Yep. Yeah, I would agree with that. Jonas Jerebko is back in Boston. Brook Lopez and Thad Young back in Brooklyn. Nothing really changes with those guys, although Lopez is the interesting one because he was dominant for months. He was that good. But there's always the lingering concern over the feet. Like, you could realistically go, I'm taking him inside the top 20 because he was pretty much a top 10 guy towards the end of the season.
I think he was the number three center after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I wouldn't be shocked. I would have said he would have been, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but he would have been top 10, I reckon, the post All-Star break in just overall players. Yeah. He was that good. But, you know, what do you do with the feet problem? It's probably going to push him down a round or two, I would suggest, in drafts. But you could grab him in the third round, and then you're going to get yourself a top 10 player. It's a big risk, but it also can pay off pretty handsomely because he was just incredible last season in the second half.
You have to make sure you reach for your backup and get like a number one type of center as your backup, I think. Just because if he goes down and you're left with, an Omer Asik as your number three center that you have to start every week. So I think you probably have to reach for your second center. But if he does stay healthy and you get another good center behind him, the upside is huge.
Another notification come through as we're recording this, Chris. Paul Millsap has agreed with a 2-year deal with Atlanta. He was debating between Atlanta and Orlando, which shocked me incredibly when I saw that this morning, but apparently he has gone back to Atlanta on 2 years. No word on the money just yet. It just had Woj retweeted that about Millsap re-signing, so that doesn't change anything for him. He just remains the same solid second-round guy that he was last season. Chris Middleton, great deal for him. A 5-year, $70 million deal. That's fantastic. I think that he drops, though, from what he did last season. I think he has a slight regression with the return of Jabari Parker. He was fantastic. He was a top 50 guy the second half of last season, Middleton. But he was also outside the top 100 to start the season when Parker was there and when Kidd didn't know what he was doing with the rotation. So he's going to fall somewhere in between that, but I don't think he's going to get that sort of opportunity that he had last season. Do you see any way that he is the same guy?
No, I think Jabari's going to be, he was the number one option offensively for them after the All-Star break. He had a 22 usage, which isn't huge, but that's a team that spreads the ball around. They're going to need him. That's the one thing, is they are going to need a lot from him still, because Giannis can't shoot. Michael Carter-Williams can't shoot. Jabari couldn't shoot last year. There are questions about whether he'll be able to hit the three. They're going to need a lot of shooting from Chris Middleton. He's going to have to carry a lot of weight. So I still think probably not top 50, though. I think that's probably
drop,
right.
He might drop two rounds. He's not dropping outside the top 100, but he's not going to be that guy who was, you know, probably a top 40 guy post All-Star. I don't think he's going to be quite that level. The three other guys who have re-signed, Kyle Singler, a pretty...
5-year deal.
Yeah, that I
mean...
I don't know what's going on with that. That's weird.
$5 million in 2020 is probably going to be like the mini mid-level exception. So that's a fine deal. I like Kyle Singler decently as like an eighth or ninth man.
I like him too, but in 5 years, he could legitimately not be good enough for the league.
That's also very possible. It's weird, like signing a decent player to a long-term deal. It feels a little like Steve Novak-y.
Yeah.
You know, a guy that just like 3 years from now, the money's not bad, but it's just a wasted roster spot.
Yeah,
like,
why is he still playing? Tristan Thompson with a big 5-year, $80 million 5 years. Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah.
And Brandon Knight, 5 years, $70 million. The fact that Brandon Knight gets less than Tristan Thompson is a little bit strange to me, but.
Tristan Thompson is going to be one of the most overdrafted players in fantasy next year, I feel like.
Yeah, I don't think you can draft him because Mozgov's still going to be there, and there's going to be nights mm-hmm. where Thompson plays more than Mozgov, but there's also going to be the same amount of nights that Mozgov plays more than Thompson, and that's the thing that really worries me about both of those guys is that one will get, they'll get 29 minutes and he'll get 21 minutes. And that's when Thompson plays and he gets 35 minutes, he just puts up crazy numbers like
yep.
good points, good rebounds, good blocks, great field goal percentage. But if he plays 22 minutes, he's not doing it. He's just... I probably won't be touching him. I think that's all we need to talk about with free agency. Chris, let's move on to the draft, which was less than a week ago, but it seems like years ago at this point, to be honest. So much has happened in the interim. What did you think of the draft?
It was entertaining. Surprisingly, I guess we didn't get that much movement on draft night, at least until like the later, the 20th range. We're making up for lost time in that regards now. I think there's almost no way this rookie class won't be better than last year's.
Last year was a disappointment. It was plagued with injuries, but even so, I think it's hard, from a fantasy point of view, rookies just don't contribute. And there was only one rookie last year that had any sort of impact on a good team. And that was Mirotić. And even then that was in, at very specific times when someone went down with an injury. Wiggins played, but he was poor a lot of times. He was good. He was also awesome.
There were three starting caliber options among the rookie class last year for fantasy, right? It was Peyton, Wiggins, and Noel, and then Mirotić towards the end of the season for about a solid month and a half. He was tremendous.
He was great, but it didn't last.
Yeah, but really beyond that, and I looked it up, even if you take out Darius Saric, who obviously didn't play a game, the lottery class played just 530 out of a possible 1,066 games between the 13 players. So it's just last year's class was a disaster, and I think there were high expectations for them.
Oh, there was, and they clearly didn't live up to those expectations. But this draft, there's a lot of guys who are in interesting situations in terms of the place that they are. They're going to be minutes off the bat, but I don't know if a lot of Karl Anthony Towns, he's not going to get 30 minutes straight away. There's almost no chance. I said initially 27 minutes, and now I'm even thinking, well, maybe that's high to start the season.
Maybe he
gets 27 post. Yeah, starting 2016, but I reckon he starts 24 minutes. And that, like, as good as he is, he's in a dynasty league, Chris, I think that he is clearly the number one guy. Like, clearly, he could potentially be a top 20 fantasy guy in his career. But he's not going to get anywhere near it next season because the minutes are going to be, they're not going to be there. There's just too much competition.
I think I might be taking D'Angelo Russell number one in a dynasty league.
Really?
Okay. I just love that situation he landed in.
So you
I love his abilities.
Oh, you look, dynasty, yes, because he's gonna, Kobe's gonna be gone and he's gonna have the keys. But even for next season, I don't really love the situation for him with Clarkson there and with Kobe there. Like, they all have to have the ball in their hands. Like, Clarkson's probably gonna fall down to the third option, and he's gonna probably be overdrafted in a ton of leagues as well next season. He's gonna drop off considerably, but. Russell may sneak into the top 100 next season, maybe, but I don't think he's going to be... Like, if he was in Philadelphia, then we'd be talking about almost a top 50 guy straight away.
Yeah.
But
I think I think I feel comfortable enough in his upside, especially with, you know, there's three guys that need the ball. You can't, I don't think in any way can you rely on Kobe Bryant for anything.
No.
Even for him to screw up D'Angelo Russell's fantasy value. Although the way things are going with the Lakers, that might be what ends up happening anyway, just because the Lakers seem to want to screw everything up. But I just feel like I can draft him and Jahlil Okafor and feel pretty confident that I'm going to get a starting caliber player out of them. You know, it's a little tougher with Russell because guard is so deep.
That's a big point. But I think the thing that I always talk about when I talk about rookies is, yeah, look, they'll have value at times. But in general, guys like these, Okafor, Russell, Towns, they're going to go probably 15 to 20 spots before they actually should. And that pretty much rules me out of grabbing all of them. Now, I was saying on the podcast a couple of days ago that last year out of the 10 or 11 leagues that I was in, 10-team, 12-team, 14, 16, 20, 30-team leagues, I drafted two rookies. One of them was Jordan Clarkson in like the 13th round of a dynasty league. And the other was Jabari Parker at pick 90 because he slid in a 12-team roto league. I didn't touch anyone else. Now, I grabbed some other guys off waivers at times. Like, I had Clarkson on the off the waiver wire in lots of leagues, Zach LaVine in lots of leagues. But in terms of drafting them, I didn't go anywhere near them because they all went way too early. And then 2 months into the season, Wiggins was getting dropped and, you know, Parker was injured. And it was just – and Payton would get dropped all the time. And then, yeah, he came back strong. But it's just people love things that are shiny and new, and I love it too. Yeah. But you got to really look at it from a fantasy point of view and go, the minutes aren't going to be there. Only three rookies got 30 minutes a game last season, I think it was. Wiggins, Noel, and Payton.
And you probably have to go back to, I mean, the last rookie that was like a true, true difference maker, probably Damian Lillard.
Yep.
I mean, at least from a fantasy perspective, he averaged like 16-6. I guess Oladipo and Carter Williams to a certain extent.
Carter Williams, yeah, Carter Williams, fair enough.
But even him, like in a roto league, he single handedly killed you in turnovers and field goal percentage. It's just the thing with rookies is we think the upside's so amazing because we've never seen them fail.
Yep.
But the burnout rate for rookies in fantasy is so high. And if you look at two guys with a similar upside, realistically similar upside, you know, I'm trying to think of someone who has like a similar upside to Jahlil Okafor. Cause I think he could legitimately put up like 16-10 as a rookie.
With
decent passing. Cause he's going to be their only offensive player. He's probably the guy you feel best about drafting, right?
Assuming you're willing to wear his 51% free throw shooting, but yes.
Yeah.
Because he can pass as well. He could get you 2.5 assists a game potentially too, maybe 3. He can pass.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going to play fast, which I think there's some concern that he might not fit that, but I think he's actually more nimble than he gets credit for.
Yeah, I'm not too worried about that. I don't think he's fat or slow or anything like that. I was watching a Duke game yesterday, I think, or the day before, and yeah, I know it's one game, and they were playing North Carolina, but he was quick. He was able to take guys off the dribble easily. He was running up and down the floor. I didn't have any concerns about his speed or his ability to run up and down a court. It was no worries. My worries is his free throw shooting. He doesn't hit threes, obviously. The fact that he can't shoot unless he's, you know, 8 feet from the basket. That's slightly my concern. But if he's still able to bully himself down low and get there, he'll shoot 58%. He'll score points. But if he gets forced out at all, then it could turn ugly pretty early. And we see rookies in general, they have poor field goal percentage. Poor.
Yeah, the one thing with him is he did shoot like 77% at the rim in college, which it's college, and everybody says he's going to struggle against NBA length, which that's one thing that I wonder. At this point, what does NBA length mean? Like, are we really that concerned that he's like, okay, he might not be able to score against Anthony Davis. Like, no. Anthony Davis might swat his shot, but, like, he's going to push Anthony Davis around even.
Yeah.
Are we really that concerned that he's going to struggle to score against Enes Kanter or Nikola Vucevic? Like, there's a lot of good centers in the NBA, but there's not a lot of guys that, like, bully you down low and keep you away from the rim. If he wants to get there against most teams, I think he's going to be able to.
Yeah, like the teams that I maybe think there's a potential worry, maybe like against Marc Gasol, like a guy like that. But he plays him twice a year. Like, you know, he can move Brook Lopez around. He can move, maybe not. Valanciunas is a pretty strong dude, so maybe in Toronto that's another situation. There might be a concern, but he can. If he gets the rim, it's pretty much all over.
Yeah, I in a column I wrote, just talking about the draft. I said he could have a DeMarcus Cousins-esque rookie season. Cousins averaged 14, 9, 2.5 assists, 1.8 combined blocks and steals. Maybe the blocks and steals are a little high.
I think he'll struggle there.
The rest of that seems pretty reasonable to me.
Just where the free throw percentage, and there's so many guys with poor free throw shooting these days. You got Dwight, Drummond, Jordan, Gobert. Yeah. Even chucking guards, like, you know, you're going to have Moutier who can't shoot them. Rondo can't shoot them. There's, you know, you could, hey, throw in Tony Roten, he can't shoot anything. You know, there's lots of guards who can't shoot. So punting free throws is it's not even a strategy anymore, because pretty much you can do it very, very
Somebody's going to be doing it in your league.
There'll be two or three guys that are doing it. And there's almost enough players to spread it around, so two or three guys can do it.
Yeah, and, like, you know, you're not going to avoid DeAndre Jordan or Andre Drummond entirely. Like, those two guys, there's some guys that are just too productive to ignore.
Yeah, exactly. So someone's going to have to go, this is what I'm doing, and then that's fine. Then you can go the opposite way to that. But there's just a lot of players around.
Steer into that curve.
Exactly. Worried about Noel and Embiid there for Okafor?
Embiid... I don't think you can I can't expect anything from him. Like, we did a podcast the other day and I said, at this point, based on what we know without any further information, I'm probably drafting him in the last round just in case. But I if we get good news about him in the next 4 months, sure. Yeah, I'm worried, but right now I can't expect anything from him.
Yeah, I think that's pretty accurate.
And Noel, I don't see any reason why the two of them can't play together.
I think they're perfect together.
It'll be squished on offense a little bit, but I'm not that concerned about it.
I think they're fine together. Look, Noel just doesn't need to be. He was really good down the stretch offensively. Even Noel last season, he really turned his game around, and he was providing a lot more shots than what he was able to do. A lot more moves, but in the end, when it comes down to him or Okafor down low on the block, it'll be okay. Nerlens, you can just stand out to the side a bit and just give it to Jahlil down there. And Okafor, you can do the same on defense. Just get out of the way and let Noel handle the big guys.
Exactly.
And I think that works pretty well. As long as they can work that out amongst themselves with communication, I think that works pretty well. Denver. Ty Lawson, Emmanuel Moutier. How long until Lawson is gone? He won't be there opening night, will he?
Get him out of there. Yeah, I think that situation's poisoned. You know, I love Lawson. I think he's a great player, but it's pretty obviously not a good cultural fit. And Moutier, if he gets to start from day one, is someone I'll definitely have my eye on. He's probably not someone I'll draft because he'll go too high. And there is some, I don't know if there's Dante Exum potential, just because Exum was so clearly not ready. But there's the typical rookie risk.
And that's the key with all these guys, is there is that risk. You don't know what's going to happen with them, and they're generally going to go higher. But straight after the draft, I did a video, my top seven rookies for next year. And I think I put Moutier at one, just like I think that he's got the potential, because he's going to have a situation. I just assume Lawson's out of there. There is literally no one that's going to take the minutes away from him. Towns has got competition in the front court. D'Angelo Russell's got to compete with Clarkson and Kobe for the ball. Okafor is potentially going to have Embiid and Noel there as well. But if Lawson's gone, it's Moutier and it's Eric Green. There's no one. He could go out there and he could be Carter Williams. He could be Wiggins. He could play 35 minutes and be the only guy that gets 35 minutes out of all the rookies. And then we saw his numbers in China. Now that's elevated because of the way the Chinese league plays and the pace they play up, but he was getting like 6 rebounds, 6 assists, 2 steals, 18 points. But again, he's got that free throw percentage problem, but the counting stats are going to be out of control if Lawson's gone. And I think that he's a real chance to be the top fantasy rookie next season.
He could do very similar to what Peyton did last season, except with more scoring.
Yes.
Maybe not quite as many assists. Peyton's more of a pass-first guy, but – he's actually a pretty good passer, especially in the pick and roll.
But he'll also hit more threes than Peyton did.
Yeah.
So I think Peyton, what, hit about three three-pointers for the season?
That might be high.
It's, yeah, yep. It just doesn't look like he's ever going to be able to develop a three-point shot. Maybe I'm wrong.
Yeah. But
it didn't look good, and that's fine. If he knows what he is, there's no point of him taking them if he's not going to hit them. Obviously, it worries them in terms of a team fit, but...
It limits his upside for sure, but you also, at some point, you have to accept who a player is. I hate the thing where we harp on players' flaws when you know what that flaw is. Like, and the player knows and they don't try to do it. Like, it's just accept them for who they are at some point.
I have a question for you, which is something I read on the fantasy basketball subreddit on Reddit, obviously, and it was a dynasty trade question. It was someone trading that they had Alfred Payton, and they were being offered Derrick Rose and the number 2 pick in a rookie draft for this season. So, you know, Towns, Okafor, Russell.
I would, assuming it's not like a salary cap, it's just a straight up dynasty. No, so it's cap. Peyton for Rose and the number 2 pick. I'd do that in a second.
Yeah, Peyton's great, but he's not. The upside is capped. Like you said, his scoring upside, his 3-point upside, it's all capped. Whereas you can get maybe Towns, maybe Okafor, maybe Russell with that second pick, and that alone is probably better than Peyton.
And even like Rose is risky as hell, obviously, but
you're basically getting him for free in that deal.
Yeah, like I it wouldn't shock me. I'm not expecting it, but it wouldn't shock me if Derrick Rose was as good as Alfred Payton, given Payton's limitations.
Definitely. Yeah, you know you're going to get more scoring out of him.
Yeah.
Sort of throw that one in there, see what you thought. But yeah, that was a pretty pretty straightforward question. Now, the Knicks, Kristaps Porzingis, Jerry and Grant. I think I like Grant a lot in that situation moving into the...
Yeah.
He could start like this. Jose Calderon there, who was... Yeah, to be kind to him, he was putrid last season. Langston Galloway, who's not good. Alexei Shved, doesn't Galloway, come back. These guys aren't good.
Langston Galloway is, like, watching him play last season, you know who he would remind me of? A bad Jordan Crawford. Jordan Crawford's
I didn't know there was a good Jordan Crawford.
That's exactly... We did a rookie mock draft in our last podcast, and Grant went 7th. That actually seems low to me.
I had it at 7 as well. I think and it could be low. I think he's got a great situation.
Yeah. I mean, they made Langston Galloway fantasy relevant.
Yeah.
Like, it's a bad situation as far as pace, offensive style, even fit a little bit just because Carmelo's going to take so many shots. But, you know, there's going to be opportunities. He's going to have, like, Carmelo's not going to bring the ball up the floor.
No.
And we've seen point guards, you know, thrive playing next to Melo. So
Ray Felton.
Ray Felton was decent.
He was. I wasn't even joking. He was actually like a decent fantasy contributor, and he's not a decent basketballer.
Yeah. Melo's an awesome scorer. For whatever else you want to say about him, he's going to give assist opportunities to whoever can pass him the ball.
And Melo's not a complete black hole, as people think. He's not a guy who's getting you 0.9 assists. He can still give you three to four assists because of the way that he gets double teamed and triple teamed. He can just do a little kick out over the top, and this doesn't happen all the time, but he still gives them. And Grant is in a really good situation there to me. Look, Alexei Shved was a top 20 guy for a stretch last season, and seriously, what the hell
what
is
a
Alexei
glorious
Shved?
What a glorious stretch it was.
It's one of those things you can never predict in fantasy basketball. You do all your drafts, you do your preparation, and then 3 months down the track, I've got to grab Alexei Shved because he's a triple-double machine. You go, what happened to the world?
And it's one of those situations where you're like doing we do our podcast 3 days a week, and it's like on a Monday, Alexei Shved has a big game, so we'll talk about him. It's like, no, you shouldn't pick up Alexei Shved. Alexei Shved's terrible. This is proven. We have this, like, this is not one that we're, like, debating still. Is Alexei Shved good at basketball? No, he's bad. And then he has another good game, and it's like, and at that point, like, somebody might have picked him up already because they took a chance on Alexei Shved. It's so hard to say there.
There's one guy that I'll never be swung on, no matter what numbers he puts up, and that's Tony Roten. He is just a horrific, horrific basketball. I can't watch him.
You don't like you don't like point guards who can't pass, can't shoot, and can't finish at the rim?
Nah, shockingly, no. Just watching him like get out there, and you'll see he's playing on the Sixers, and you'll see guys on the Sixers like Jakar Sampson, who I claimed was the worst player in the NBA last season. But he would stand there with his hands in the air, going, "Tony, come on, pass it to me." And I go, "You know what? That's probably a good option, to give it to Jakar Sampson instead of driving with four guys on you and just throwing it straight up in the air." And it makes you just want to, like, I can't watch this. I gotta turn it over. And the thing is that he's probably going to be their starting point guard next season, and that's going to make me very sad.
Yeah. Yep. They're, that was why I was so frustrated that Okafor went to them instead of Russell.
Yep.
I get it. Okafor might even be a better prospect. It might end up being a better player down the road. But it just, I want them to look like a basketball team on offense. They were good defensively, but I want them to look like an actual basketball team with a plan and an idea and pieces that make sense together.
Yep.
And that's not, you know, Okafor and Noel can be, but the rest of the roster is such a tire fire.
Exactly. Thoughts on Porzingis?
I think he's got a ton of potential. I don't see how you draft him in a yearly league next season.
I think there's no one in New York's front court. It depends on what happens with Greg Monroe, but there's literally no one there. There's Quincy Acey, there's Lou Amundsen, there's, like, who is there? Like, Lance Thomas. There's nobody in that front court, like, literally nobody, and they don't want to play Melo at the four.
Yeah, and Jason Smith and Cole Aldrich were fantasy relevant for very small stretches, but stretches nonetheless last season.
Andrea Bargnani made a comeback.
Yeah, and Porzingis averaged 18.4, 7.7 rebounds, 1.5 steals, 1.8 blocks per 36. And he was 19 and playing in the second toughest professional league in the world.
Exactly. And
so
he's, look, the Knicks could potentially be as bad as Sevilla was last season anyway. So he's going to get that opportunity. And there's no one, like, there is, that's the thing. It all comes down to, yeah, okay, he's years away from being a relevant player, NBA player, whatever. But who else is getting the minutes? There's nobody there. Unless Greg Monroe comes, then it changes. But
yeah,
for the time being, he's going to get 25 minutes a night, and I can't see a situation with the way their roster currently is that he doesn't. And that means that he's going to be out there, and if he plays well, he might get 30 minutes a night, and then he might put up numbers, and then you go, he's going to be someone to watch on the waiver wire, and I hope that he's over this hip injury, because I want to see him at Summer League. I want to see him play.
Yeah. I mean, he seems like he could be a lot of fun at Summer League.
Oh, I hope that he's able to play.
What I like about this draft was the two Euros that went in the lottery. It was just two, right? It was just Hezonja and Porzingis.
Yes.
They are not at all the stereotypical European player.
No, it's
they awesome. Are not the fundamentally sound guys with great footwork, and, you know, they beat you with their craftiness and all these labels that we just throw on European players because that's how Dirk and Pau Gasol play. These dudes are athletic and they like to attack.
Oh yeah. And you hear them talk and it's just, they're cocky, they're confident.
Oh, Hezonja's the best.
He's hilarious. Yeah. Love it. And
I hope he's a star, just because it's going to be so entertaining.
He's basically going to be Croatian Kobe.
Yeah.
Just with less off-puttingness to free agents.
Maybe he could be like a good Nick Young.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, that's a good comparison. Let's move on to dynasties briefly.
Okay.
We talked D'Angelo Russell, Karl Anthony Towns before, and you like Russell maybe more than Towns. I like Towns as the number one guy. But is there anyone, like, late that we're talking 3 years down the track, that if you're investing for the future in a dynasty league out of this draft, where you go, this is a guy that I think is going to become that player, like any of these other second round guys, like Paul Millsap, or Chandler Parsons, or any of these guys who are Monte Ellis, who is someone you go, this is a guy that, irrespective of fit, because if a guy's going to be good, he's going to break out at some point, whether it's on that team or another team. Who do you like in that second round sort of level?
I think the obvious one is Montrezl Harrell.
Yep.
Just he seems pretty close to ready. I think we're going to find out pretty quickly whether he is or not. But if he is, I think he could, you know, I guess the two obvious comparison would be Kenneth Faried.
Yep.
As a guy who fell in the draft, put up good numbers in college, but he was doing it against tougher competition. And yeah, he seems like he could be really, really productive in the right situation if everything comes to pass, if everything goes right for him.
Yep, I would agree with that. I think there's a good situation for him there. He fell probably 10 spots from where he probably should have been drafted, although, you know, when you say should have been drafted, he was drafted where he was, so that's where he should have been drafted, yeah. But he did fall. Jordan Mickey's another guy that I think is an interesting guy in the second round. I think he's quite talented. And another guy that I talked about when I did my draft review podcast, Pat Connaughton. He's a supreme athlete. He's in a situation now in Portland where I know Alfred Kaminu's there, but he might be able to get minutes at the two, at the three. He can do a whole heap of stuff if he commits to basketball fully instead of the baseball. But there's a lot to like about Connaughton as well. And Olivier Hanlon.
That was the other guy I was thinking of. Utah. That is a situation that's ripe for someone to take it.
Trey Burke is horrible. He's too small. He can't shoot. He doesn't offer anything positive. Exum
doesn't do anything well.
No.
Trey Burke legitimately doesn't do anything well at the NBA level right now.
No, Exum can't shoot. He struggled to score. His passing wasn't great, but his defense was very good. Like, it wasn't passable. It was really good. And he was on the court. He would score 4 points, but he would go out there and he would able to shut guys down, and he's going to get better. So there's value there, but Hanlon can easily, you know, Trey Burke could be gone by midseason. I wouldn't be shocked at all, and Hanlon could step into a backup role and really start to shine. I think he's a really, really intriguing guy. So if you're looking for a last pick in a dynasty league, I think Hanlon is a really interesting player. Chris, you got time for a couple of questions?
Absolutely, yeah. I got nowhere to be.
All right, let's go. Steven Van Marnen, who's on Twitter at @ssvanmarnen. He says, howdy, I'm in a league where we keep one rookie. What is your outlook for Wiggins, Mirotic, Clarkson, and Levine? To me, that is pretty clear cut in terms of I'm keeping one of those guys. I'm keeping Wiggins.
Yeah.
You?
You could make an argument for Mirotic just because of how much he showed. And I think he showed a more varied game than Andrew Wiggins. And that's not surprising, given what we've seen from Andrew Wiggins in college. I don't think he's going to end up being like an all-around star for fantasy, you know?
Yep.
Like, I don't think you're going to get, especially with Flip Saunders, I don't think you're going to get a lot of three-point shooting from him. You're not going to get a ton of assists. He's not a playmaker. He's a scorer.
He's a solid rebounder, but he's not a great rebounder.
Yeah. I think his best-case scenario for fantasy is probably Paul George, but even that seems really optimistic.
Yeah, I agree with that.
But in terms of opportunity, I think that's where he edges Mirotic.
4 years' time, Mirotic will probably be the better guy, but that's 4 years down the track. And to make that investment in a league where you're keeping one guy, you want someone who's going to give you that value next season and the year after, because Mirotic has still got Gibson, Gasol, Noah ahead of him. Look, he might overtake Gibson next season, but he's still not going to overtake Noah and Gasol most likely. So that might be two or 3 years down the track.
Gibson's not going anywhere either way. Gibson's still good enough that he's going to get 20-24 minutes per game.
So Mirotic,
if they traded Gibson,
But
that's one thing that could change it. But you're still talking about a third man.
Yeah, exactly. They need to trade two guys and have him there, and then we're talking. Then we get Mirotic. Mirotic has got the potential to be a guy who could be a top 20 guy who can score. He can hit threes. He can grab big rebounds. He also blocks shots. He's a decent passer. He's a great free throw shooter. There's a lot to like about him. But if you're keeping one guy, it's Wiggins. Clarkson and Levine, I'm pretty confident that Levine has had his best season ever. I don't think that he'll ever get that. It's all opportunity. He was playing like 40 minutes a night down the stretch, and he looked fine, but he's not that good. And the opportunity, look, now Tyus Jones is there, because I don't think, you know, they didn't pick Tyus Jones. They traded to get Tyus Jones because they wanted a capable ball handler behind Rubio. And Levine is maybe capable, but he's not great at it. And I don't think he fits as a point guard. I don't think he's ever going to have as good a stretch as what he had the second half of last season. And Clarkson could potentially be the same with Russell now in town. Does he ever have a stretch where he plays 40 minutes a night and scores, you know, 20 points with 7 assists and 5 rebounds? This could be it for them. As much as I like Clarkson, they may never get back to that level, or them, maybe more accurately, they'll never get better than that level.
Yeah, and Levine, I want to bring up the fact that Minnesota is going to be a complete nightmare for fantasy next season. Again, they were last season. They have so many guys.
And
I don't know how good any of them are, but they just have so many guys.
There's the obvious ones. There's Rubio. There's Jones now. There's Levine. Kevin Martin, Wiggins.
Kevin Martin's still there. Pekovic is still there. Jang is still there.
Kevin Garnett's there. They traded a first rounder for Adrian Payne. And then you throw in Chase Budinger's there, who actually had times when he put up decent numbers. There's just too many guys. It's like we said with Boston earlier. There's just so many guys there who could legitimately demand 20 minutes a night, but they're not going to get it. And who knows what they're going to do. It's an odd sit. And it's odd that they've got so many guys who are good, yet they were the worst team in the league. Injuries obviously played a part in that. The last question, Chris, comes from Barry Baker, who's on Twitter at BarryBaker8664. Barry is my number one question submitter. He's Barry Baker, the podcast question maker, as I've affectionately dubbed him. His question is, he just drafted Hezonja in his rookie draft, but he's been offered the sixth pick next season plus David West. Should he take it?
Next year's draft does not look great. By all accounts, it's a pretty weak talent pool. Obviously, we're a year away. Who knows what that means? Because D'Angelo Russell was the 15th best player in his high school class until he blew up in Ohio State. So who knows what that actually means? But a lot of from what I've seen, it's not expected to be a great talent level. David West, I don't really know how much you can expect from him at this point. So, you probably got Hezonja maybe sixth, maybe a little higher, but probably not.
Yeah, I think he had the sixth pick, sixth or seventh pick in his draft.
So it's basically you're pushing back that year of potential. You're hoping that a better player is available at number six, and you're hoping that David West can overcome the fact that his production has slid across the board three straight years, and he was basically a non-factor in the second half last season.
Oh, yep, yep.
I don't think I would do it. I think I would stick with Hezonja.
I would stick with Hezonja as well, because I think next season's probably about a three-player draft from what I'm hearing. Ben Simmons, Scalabrissier, I've got to learn how to pronounce that one, and there was one other guy that I can't remember who the other player is who are considered talents, and then there's a pretty decent drop-off.
Yeah. Hezonja...
Hello, Chris.
I the stealth was it?
Oh, you dropped out. I didn't hear that.
Oh, I don't love Hezonja's fit in Orlando right away, just because they're another team that has a ton of dudes. But that's a team that really needs shooting. They really need scoring. It wouldn't shock me if in a couple years he's their go-to scorer.
Oh, definitely.
If he develops, right? So I think you probably pass on that, because honestly, I'm not sure you won't get a better player than David West with the last pick of your draft.
Yep, I agree with all that. I think Barry, you have to keep Hezonja in that situation. Chris, we've made it to the end of the podcast. We've been talking for an hour, but it went by very quickly. It was great having you on. There was obviously a lot to discuss. Now you can go home and enjoy your the end of your workday as I get ready to start my day here.
All right. Have a nice day. Thanks for having me on. I'm sure we'll talk again soon.
Definitely. And you can make sure you follow Chris at CTowersCBS and check out his great fantasy basketball podcast where he does it along with Zach Harper and Joe Polito, correct?
Yep. Yeah, you might know Zach as at Talk Hoops on Twitter. He's pretty popular.
He's
way more popular than me.
He's way more popular than me as well. And Joe was on this podcast last season as well.
Joe's good people.
He is. He's a very, very good guy. So I appreciate you taking the time out of your day, Chris, to come on.
It was
great having you on. And everybody, make sure you're subscribing to Chris's podcast, subscribing to this podcast. Leave us both a review. Leave us both a ranking on iTunes, on Stitcher, wherever you may get that podcast from, and help us both climb those rankings and get noticed more. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.